What's cracking? Big dogs. Welcome, Bite, to the channel.
Welcome, Bite, to the headquarters. Apologize if the energy's a little bit down right now. Filming this like 13 seconds after the Cam Akers torn Achilles injury news. I made a couple videos on that yesterday, so if you're new to the channel, you can go Bike on my channel and just search Cam Akers. I'm sure about a zillion videos will pop up because I've talked about him about 240 times in the 30 videos I put out this summer. But if you want the instant reaction to Cam Akers' injury yesterday, we did it. We need to get away from the running backs or else I'll get too emotional here. Today we're talking about wide receivers. We're going to build upon yesterday's video, which was five running backs in 2021 fantasy football that have elite upside. And now we're switching tune over to wide receivers. Today we're looking at five guys, five wide receivers, shout out the burger store, that have elite fantasy football upside in 2021. I've got a button down. Ooh, my belt's undone. I'm getting frisky for y'all already. Y'all know the deal. We got to tuck our shirts in. We're going to stop yelling. We're already doing. Let's see. First guy up on this list should come as no surprise from my Dirty Birds roster. Yes, I'm a Falcons fan. Don't ask me how I became a Falcons fan. Calvin Ridley, elite route runner. Calvin Ridley, currently the odds-on favorite per this place you might have heard of, Las Vegas, to lead the NFL in receiving yards. That is insane. Found that stat out like 3 days ago. Didn't realize he was that highly regarded. Obviously, the opportunity is there with Julio gone. And we actually have a nice sizable sample of what Calvin Ridley has done without Julio Jones in the lineup, okay? So the last 2 years, we have an 8-game split without Julio on the lineup. And here it is. This guy's averaging over 20 PPR fantasy points per game without Julio. Right side is without Julio. Left side in split is with Julio. If he gets those touchdown numbers up, man, you're looking at 7.25 receptions, over 11 targets per game, 107 receiving yards. Those are like literally Julio type numbers by himself. The touchdown numbers, a little bit lower. But if those go up, man, if those go up, you have Arthur Smith coming over as the new head coach. He's a genius. He's a wizard in the red zone. Calvin Ridley is going to be unstoppable this year, right? I'm not telling you anything new. It's pretty simple. This passing offense is going to run directly through him. He's an elite separator and route runner already. He's young. The only thing that was keeping him away from a 30% or more target share was Julio, and Julio is gone. Ridley finishing this year as the overall wide receiver one in fantasy isn't even a weird thing to say anymore. It's not even a hot take. I feel like most people probably have him ranked inside their top 3, 4, 5 at the latest. So Calvin Ridley, elite upside this year in fantasy football. It's wheels so far fucking up for Calvin Ridley, we don't even need front tires. All right, Calvin Ridley, unbelievable upside, really high floor as well. So he's just good all-around pick, and you're seeing him move further and further up in underdogs ADP. Start of the year out as like a third-round pick, fourth-round pick prior to Julio. Even after the Julio trade, he was still going like early third, late second. And I think you can argue him all the way up into like the Stephon Diggs territory, right? Early second round right now. And that's about where his ADP is, but his elite upside is certainly factored into there. After Calvin Ridley, we're going to move down the ADP list a little bit to that end of the second, early third round turn, where these young, primed up, sliced up, sizzled up wide receivers have already broken out, but we're looking for them to take that elite step. And there are three guys that I want to briefly touch on, but there's one of them that I'm a little bit higher on than the other two in terms of just overall raw elite upside. Okay, when this video is about upside, this video is not really about weighing risk with upside. I'm not telling you, oh, he becomes a good pick or you should reach up for him because his upside is so high, right? We're not really talking about the risks here. I just want to let you know who I think has absolutely elite upside this year in fantasy football. I'm talking about the DK Metcalf, AJ Brown, Justin Jefferson tier. Right now, they are the wide receiver 6, 7, and 8 in ADP. They're kind of going after those running backs in the second tier, right? You have the elite running backs, and then you get into the early second, mid-second round, and you're looking at guys like Joe Mixon, rest in peace to Cam Akers, Aaron Jones, Najee Harris, Clyde, right? And then these wide receivers start to go off the board just naturally because people like wide receivers less than they like running backs. They're a lot less enticing. But these guys are unbelievably talented. They're all young. They're athletic. They're entering their prime. They've already broken out. So we're not projecting here, right? We're not projecting. It's just a quick elevator ride up to the top for these guys if they take a step up from what they've already done in their NFL careers. What is probably subconsciously holding all three of those guys bike in the ADP is their respective offenses, right? They're all in run first offenses. Tennessee last year, third lowest pass rate in the NFL. Minnesota, sixth lowest pass rate in the NFL. And Seattle, surprisingly, is an interesting case. They were actually above average in pass rate. They were 14th in overall plays being passes in terms of percentage, likely due to the start of their season when they were on fire and they were, as people with no personality like to say, letting Russ cook. Okay, the case for all three of these guys, super, super easy, right? Jefferson, absolutely dumb fucking rookie year, 1,400 yards after not even really playing the first few weeks of the season. Elite route runner. You look at Matt Harmon's reception perception, he's literally in like the 95th percentile in terms of the separator versus man versus press. And while this is a run first offense, the passing game is an absolute target funnel, right? Jefferson averaged 10 targets a game over the second half of the year. He needed to get accustomed to being the one in this offense, right? He didn't play much the first 2-3 weeks. He was averaging like 5 to 6 targets a game over the first 8 games of the season. And then he went absolutely nuts. 10 targets per game. You look at that volume and you project it out to the rest of the year. The math is quite simple. 10 targets a game, 16 games, 160 targets, 17 games, 170 targets. And if some of those red zone targets, right, one of the things holding you back is obviously Adam Thielen. Adam Thielen's been a great receiver, great fantasy receiver. If you got him in Dynasty a few years back, he gave you everything and more that you could have invested into him. Great red zone option, right? Still very much a good red zone option. But in terms of like targets, receptions, receiving yards, he ranked like 25th in those categories. So I don't expect him to be a huge factor in fantasy this year. Be a great low-end wide receiver 2, high-end wide receiver 3. But Jefferson upside, if he starts to take some of those red zone looks away from Adam Thielen, is sky high. And we actually saw that over the second half of the year as Jefferson continued to get more and more involved in the offense. His red zone targets and his 10 zone targets started shooting up in terms of just his overall involvement in the offense down there. And if he scores, you know, 10 to 12 touchdowns instead of 7, you're looking at an elite finish amongst the fantasy wide receivers. Thielen turned 13 10 zone targets into 10 touchdowns. That's an unreal rate. He's great down there. Jefferson went 1 for 8 inside the 10 zone. I expect that to shoot up. I expect him to meet somewhere in the middle there. And I think more touchdowns are coming Justin Jefferson's way because this is just an efficient offense overall that's going to move smoothly. And same thing for A.J. Brown, right? I know Julio is added to the mix, but Corey Davis and Jonu Smith are both gone, which equates to like 26, 28% of the target share in that offense last year, which is where Julio will probably step into. Some of those will go to A.J. Brown. A.J. Brown, this is the crazy thing about A.J. Brown. This is why you look at the addition of Julio and you immediately say like, okay, A.J. Brown will probably do around what he did last year. A.J. Brown finished as the wide receiver 6 in fantasy last year in points per game. He did that on 106 targets. He had 106 targets last year and finished as the wide receiver 6 in points per game. Okay. He did that on such limited targets because he's such an imposing wide receiver on any area of the field, right? His yak is unreal. He'll go up for contested catches. He can catch anything and do anything with the ball once he does make those plays. Imagine this man gets real wide receiver 1 type targets, even like low end wide receiver 1 type targets, 130, 140 targets, dare I say 150 targets. Remember, he played with 2 fucking sliced up knees last year. He had to get surgery this offseason, okay? 2 of them, both knees. He said, he came out and said, I should have stopped playing after week 1 because of the knee injuries, but he did not. And he finishes a wide receiver 6 in fantasy points per game. I think we're underestimating just how freakishly talented, athletically gifted this dude AJ Brown is. If AJ Brown sees 150 targets this year, 140 targets this year, I mean, he's averaged 12.5 and 10 yards per target in his first 2 years. So at a minimum, you're looking at probably 10 yards per target because this guy is just so good with the ball in his hands. But whatever the target numbers are, just multiply it by 10. That's going to be his yardage. You want to have a good, efficient year, multiply it by 11, multiply it by 12, because that's what he did in his rookie year. You're looking at massive, massive, massive numbers, right? He can easily turn 130 targets, which is not out of the realm of possibilities, even with Julio there, even in run first offense. 130 targets, easily turns that into 1,500 yards, probably double-digit touchdowns, okay? But I will say this, and we're about to get into the fucking weeds. We're about to get into the big facts. If there's one of these guys I'm going to choose to be absolutely elite and finish as the overall wide receiver 1 this year in fantasy, it's actually DK Metcalf. Before we do so, before we get into the DK Metcalf propaganda, if you're new to the channel, I would appreciate it. I would love it for you to scroll down and hit the button that says subscribe. It's a big, actually, it might not even be a button. I think right now it's just outline text in red. But if it says subscribe and not subscribed, let's pull some man shit and put the D in it. All right, subscribe to the channel and you'll be following me along for the rest of the summer. I'll try to give you the best fantasy football advice I could possibly give, which isn't very good. It's not upside like these guys, but I do my best. I do my research and I present the big facts to you. So if at any point in the video you find out something you didn't know before, hit the thumbs up button and subscribe. The entire story of Tyler Lockett's I think it's important to tell the picture of the Seattle Seahawks offense and not just sit here and tell you about how athletically gifted DK Metcalf is, right? Because we could do that for an hour. The entire story of Tyler Lockett's season was the lack of consistency. But that was the case for basically the entire Seattle offense, right? Both Wilson and Metcalf fell off after the first half of the year too. And these are Metcalf's splits in weeks 1 through 9 versus weeks 10 through 17, 8 games on both sides of it. Weeks 1 through 8 is on the right side. Look at those numbers. I don't have to tell you that his first half pace of the season, which would have been a 16-game pace of 136 targets, 86 catches, 1,576 receiving yards, and 16 touchdowns. I don't have to tell you would have ranked pretty high in fantasy, okay? Wide receiver 3 behind Adams and about a half a point behind Tyreek Hill. 21.23 PPR fantasy points per game, 18.5 half PPR fantasy points per game. The dude was literally averaging one touchdown per game and 99 receiving yards per game. Now, when we take a look at Russell Wilson's first half splits, unbelievable in the first 8 weeks of the season, averaging 37.12 pass attempts per game. That dropped by almost 5 over the second half of the season. Passing touchdowns went from 3.5 down to 1.5, 318 passing yards down to 209 passing yards over the second half of the season. And things are going to change there in Seattle, and we'll get to that in a second. But one of the points I want to get across here is what people have this thought of when it comes to DK Metcalf. The narrative around DK Metcalf, I feel like, and why he fell off last year, people don't like to look at Russ. They don't like to look at his offense. They don't say, oh, Russ fell off. His passing yards were terrible, right? We just think of Russ as one of the most accurate pinpoint, best quarterbacks in the NFL. We don't take into account just how fucking good DK Metcalf actually was as a player. People think that the defenses have him figured out, right? All he does is run downfield, double coverage him, make sure he doesn't catch the deep balls, and that's the end of the story for DK Metcalf. But that cannot be any further from the truth, because again, we go back to Matt Harmon's Reception Perception, one of my favorite resources in the fantasy football space. You can go cop it right now, receptionperception.com. He looks at the percentile in terms of success rate on different routes, on different coverages. And DK Metcalf's success rate versus man, 88th percentile in the history of Reception Perception, versus press, 94th percentile in the history of Reception Perception. Those numbers always equate to elite seasons. Like, those are really, really high versus man versus press. And that is separation on all different types of routes, okay? This was a quote. This is quoted from Matt Harmon's Reception Perception. I mean, he's probably going to be pissed if I keep just giving away all of his free shit or all of his paid stuff. But that's what we do here. We're acting as the intermediary. We're the middleman, right? You no longer need a drug dealer because we are the drug dealer injecting the shit into your veins for you. We're giving you the big facts because everybody else does it better. So we just try to weed out all the, no pun intended, we try to weed out all the bad shit and give you straight cocaina. None of that laced up fentanyl bullshit here, all right? The Seahawks had Metcalf in a limited role as a rookie while he grew into his paws. Weird selection of words there, Matt. The team started to open things up for him last year. His 9 route rate, 22.9%, went down, okay? So he was running less routes down the field, while his comeback, 5.2%, and dig rate, 11.5%, shot up. He posted above average success rates on both patterns. No one should dare bring any more questions about Metcalf's ability as a full field route runner. Those are so beyond played out. Metcalf has the route running profile of a true alpha receiver and made big jumps from year 1 to year 2. Metcalf is becoming an elite separator on a multitude of routes. He is not just a deep guy. And is flying under the radar because of how they finished the season. You might look at Wilson's numbers last year and be like, yeah, he fell off. Like, maybe he's not that great of a fantasy option. But Wilson set career highs last year in completions, in pass attempts, in completion rate, passing touchdowns, and fantasy points. If I told you that at the beginning of the year, you would not be down on him whatsoever. And everything we're hearing out of Seattle in terms of new offense coordinator Shane Waldron is that it's going to be a much more high-tempo, up-tempo offense, which means more pass attempts. You don't go up-tempo, high-tempo, and run the ball more. Seahawks, over the last 3 years, which is what's been capping Wilson's upside, even though he still threw for 40 fucking touchdowns last year, you look at the last 3 years, 2020, neutral game script pace, rank, okay? So we're looking at the pace of their offense, like how quickly they hurried up, how quickly they ran plays in neutral game scripts, okay? Because these things can get skewed. If a team is up by 14, obviously they're going to hurry up, or they're going to slow down a little bit more. If they're down by 22 points, they're going to hurry up a little bit. So neutral game script means within 7 points on either side. You're either down 7 or less, or you're up 7 or fewer. I like that little fucking switch up, less or fewer. The high risk vocabulary is getting thrown out left and right. Neutral game script pace rank, 2020, they ranked 22nd in the NFL. 2019, 24th in the NFL. 2018, 18th in the NFL. So they're always in the bottom half, usually in the bottom 10 or 8 in terms of neutral game script pace rank. So with a more up-tempo offense, we could start to imagine a high-volume DK Metcalf. I mean, their actions this offseason dictate that they're going more in the direction of a pass-heavy offense, right? They draft Dwayne Eskridge in the second round, they sign Gerald Everett, and they let Carlos Hyde walk. Those things dictate to you that they are starting to consider the passing game a high priority here. I don't have to sit here and talk about Russ and how he's passed for 31 or more touchdowns in 4 straight years, despite seeing volume close to the fucking mute button. But here's a chart anyways, okay? I wanted to look at Because something that's relatively sticky, or where you can kind of project to the passing touchdown numbers for a quarterback, is the touchdown rate here, okay? That's the column in yellow. And these are Russell Wilson's touchdown rate numbers. So just the percentage of his overall throws that have gone for touchdowns over the last 4 years. 7.2% last year, 6% in 2019. And I want you to keep in mind, these numbers are all, these are top five numbers in the NFL year in and year out. 6% of your passes going for touchdowns will usually be around, you know, number five or four in the NFL in terms of passing rate. So even when you see six, it's only seeming low because 7.2 and 8.2 are so fucking high. Those, I'm pretty sure that it led the league both of those years. 7.2, 6%, 8.2, 6.1%. So the average there is 6.9%. And if we get normal Wilson efficiency, meaning touchdown rate, normal, plus more volume, we're looking at an unbelievable fantasy year, which is what the rest of the chart kind of dictates for you. Okay. So projected pass attempts in 2021. I think last year he had 558, I want to say. I think that's why I used that in the first column. So we're projecting more this year. If we project more up-tempo, so we look at 558, and then we just look at some arbitrary numbers, 575, 600, 650. Pass touchdowns at 6% touchdown rate, which was his lowest number of the last 4 years. You're looking at 33, 35, 36, 39. If we want to get generous and go up to the average, right? If we just go the average touchdown rate over the last 4 years, 6.9%, and he stays at 558 pass attempts, you're still looking at 38 passing touchdowns. If he starts to shoot up a little bit more in volume, we could see 40, 41, 45, 48, an insanely efficient year. I know we've been hoping about this forever, but this feels like the first time in the offseason where like the vibe actually matches up with what we want to happen. Not every word out of camp is about establishing the ground game. Again, if Wilson pops off, who's going to benefit most? Probably the 6'3", 228-pound, 23-year-old coming into his prime third year of NFL experience with elite athleticism, explosiveness, attached to one of the most accurate deep passers in the history of the NFL. So again, this is the elite upside video, not what's most likely to happen. Most likely we're going to be sitting here in the summer of 2022 and saying the same fucking thing that we're saying right now, that we're hoping Wilson gets that volume bump. But if it happens, Metcalf goes absolutely fucking nuclear. Okay. Sorry, that was a long one on DK. Again, if you're enjoying the video, always hit the thumbs up, subscribe to the channel. If you're new, we go in depth on these players like this in every fucking video. 6 days, 8 days a week. Let's move on to maybe not one single player, but I want to talk about the Dallas Cowboys offense. And I don't think we're properly rating just how high this volume can be and how mediocrely efficient these wide receivers need to be in order to be really good at fantasy based on the volume. Maybe the Dak propaganda has slowly morphed into hyperbole at this point based on like the 5-game sample size we saw last year. But the bigger thing here, to be completely honest, is not really whether or not like Dak Prescott is an elite passer. The reason we are so sure about the Cowboys offense being high powered outside of just the personnel that they have, which is fucking fantastic, is the sample size that we have of Kellen Moore taking over as the offense coordinator in 2019. The pace of his offense was just a straight fucking sprint. It was second highest pace in the NFL in 2019, but it wasn't a full season. So we're looking at the sample size and we're like, okay, you know, we've also optimistically projected small sample sizes of coaches to be the same thing last year and have those projections and get excited, like fucking Freddie Kitchens, for example, right? And then that was a disaster. You come into 2020 and we're hoping that Kellen Moore stays around. He does. They re-sign him and we're hoping that they run at the same pace that he did the previous year. And we looked at 2020 and that's exactly what happens. So you look at the pace. This is Per Football Outsiders. Dallas's pace in terms of second per play, first overall, second per play in the first half, second per play in the second half. You know, you look at all of these things across the board and they basically lead the NFL in pace in every statistical category. We should have zero questions about the pace of this offense. And that's what makes this Cowboys offense such a lock to have an unbelievably high floor. And we try to predict two things in fantasy football. We try to predict volume and we try to predict efficiency. And we already have one side of the equation figured out. We have the volume side figured out, and it is really fucking high, which again gives you that super safe floor. But if the efficiency of these pass catchers and the efficiency of Dak is even a little bit above average, like let alone top five, if he actually performs like an elite player or any of these wide receivers perform like elite players, it's going to be record set across the board. We want to look back at last year. Dak played 5 games, okay? And we're going to discount week 5 because he left. So we have 4 full games of where he's a starter and he played the full game. His pace was literally 804 pass attempts, 548 completions, or you could look at that from a wide receiver perspective, 548 receptions, 6,770 passing yards, 36 pass touchdowns. So I wanted to do a chart similar to what we just did with Seattle and Russell Wilson. And we go to Dak Prescott in 2020 based on 650 pass. Here's the thing. Like, it's insane to assume 804 pass attempts. Like, there's no fucking way that that's going to happen. But it's fun. So we put it on the chart as the last column there. You can see 804. It's the darkest green. And what I wanted to do was take four different pass attempt totals, okay? So the yellow is 650. The light green is 700, then goes 750, 804, which was what he was on pace for last year. So we want to take somewhere in between there to get a realistic look based on the pace, but based on what we've seen the last couple of years of how high volume this could be. And then all the way on the left side, you see the target share. So I'm looking at these different receivers, and I'm thinking, okay, if someone has 15% target share in this volume of pass attempts, 16.5%, 19%, 22%, 25%, how many targets will that equate to on the year? So we're just messing around. And for reference, last year, you could see this chart. Tony, throw this up, and then we'll go back to the target share. The entirety of the 2020 season, Michael Gallup had a 17.2% target share, CeeDee Lamb at 17.7%, Amari Cooper at 21.1%. And if you look at the four full games with Dak, 10% for Michael Gallup, 13.9% for CeeDee Lamb, 24.4% for Amari Cooper. So that's where I base the target share numbers off of, you know, just the overall 2020 season, four games with Dak. So I wanted to find somewhere in the middle ground just to give you arbitrary target share numbers and what those target numbers were going to be based on overall pass attempts. And as you go across the target numbers, across the screen, if he has 700 pass attempts and a wide receiver has 19% of the targets, which is not really even that high of a number. A lot of wide receiver twos in offenses, some wide receiver threes in offenses have 19% of the targets. That's going to be 133 targets, okay? So if we're looking at Amari Cooper at 24.4% of the targets in the four games that Dak threw last year, look between 22 and 25% of the target share in this offense will do as the total pass attempt numbers go up. Like, insane. If Amari Cooper has 165 targets, his upside is for sure elite. If they do, for some fucking reason, throw the ball 804 times and he has 22% of those, it's 177. He can go over 200 targets. Obviously, that's wildly optimistic. Very unlikely to happen. But listen, if CeeDee Lamb and Amari Cooper both settle between 19 and 22 targets and they are in the 700 to 750 pass attempt range, they're both looking at like 140 to 150 targets. Big, big fucking numbers. So the key point to take away here, Cooper has been the apple of Dak's eye, right? If we're going to get the volume out of that passing offense that we think we're going to get, the target shares don't even need to be in the upper echelon with this type of volume. If Cooper can stay healthy for the year, which is seeming to be already a fucking issue, the volume upside is elite, all right? If something is fucked up with Cooper's foot or ankle, CeeDee Lamb, volume could be elite. Like legitimately 11 to 12 targets per game out of the slot, all right? So at this point, we simply have a big enough sample size with this offense running under Kellen Moore, the volume, the pace, the up-tempo, to know that that's what they're about, right? We're not projecting off an 8-game sample size anymore. We're projecting off of a fucking 24-game sample size, and the pace has been exactly the same throughout, and it's really, really straight sprint, which means the volume is going to be known to a reasonable degree. So those are just like the guys overall that I'm talking about for elite upside, right? We have Calvin Ridley. We've got the three middle round guys in Metcalf, AJ Brown, Justin Jefferson. And then we've got this Dallas offense, Amari Cooper, CeeDee Lamb. Some honorable mentions, though. It's tough because the middle tiers of guys you like to have on your team that you like to draft are usually stuck in some sort of timeshares, or they're just a high-end wide receiver too that might have better teammates. You're talking about Tampa Bay. You're talking about Tyler Lockett. You're talking about, you know, Adam Thielen, the Carolina wide receivers. I think Cooper Kupp has massive touchdown upside in 2021, which means overall that he has massive upside overall for fantasy. And I know a lot of people love Robert Woods' upside with Matthew Stafford here, and rightfully so, but Kupp is 2 years removed, or a year removed, basically, from being a wide receiver four in fantasy. Woods is the same player year in and year out, and it does not come with much upside, okay? This is a tweet I put out a couple weeks ago. Make sure you're following me on Twitter if you're not already. Robert Woods' fantasy finishes over the last 4 years in half PPR, fantasy points per game. Wide receiver 19, wide receiver 17, wide receiver 17, wide receiver 18. So it feels like Woods and Kupp continue to get lumped in together in the same fantasy tier and in terms of like where you should be drafting him. But for me, Kupp just has a much, much higher ceiling because of the touchdown upside. Like, we've seen him have a double-digit touchdown upside ceiling. No more Cam Akers could mean more targets for Cooper Kupp in the red zone as well. So I really like Cooper Kupp. Last honorable mention here, Devontae Smith in Philly, man. I really think this guy is going to set the world ablaze as a rookie. There's absolutely a world where Jalen Hurts flames out and just stinks as an NFL passer, but there's two sides to every coin, man. And one of them reads Hurts is better, and he becomes a good NFL passer. And if that's the case, it's, again, wheels the fuck up for Devontae Smith. I think he'll take over as the wide receiver one immediately, if not the offensive player number one in this offense. And the separation he creates, I think, will just warrant a zillion targets. Again, going back to reception perception by Matt Harmon, he does college prospects as well. And first thing he said in Devonta Smith's profile was by far and away the best separator in this class, no question about it. Maybe he doesn't have elite upside, but I think 1,000 receiving yards in his rookie year is elite upside. And I think I won't be surprised at all if he sees 110 to 120 targets this year, tops 1,000 yards as a rookie. And that is a fantastic 7th, 8th, 9th round pick, someone with much higher upside than given credit for at the moment. All right. Let me know who you guys think has elite upside. Obviously, Davante Adams, Tyreek Hill, those guys, Stephon Diggs even. You can throw them into there, but I didn't want to bore you with players everybody knows about. So I just put Calvin Ridley on the list because none of you guys know about him. That's it for today's video, though. Again, if you enjoy the video, thumbs up, subscribe to the channel if you're new. We do deep dives like this literally every single day. We do Q&A questions if you have any about your dynasty team, your fantasy team, every Saturday on our Q&A Assault series. That is available only to the Patreons, patreon.com/BDGE. That'll get you access to a whole bunch of shit, too. A bunch of perks on there that'll be listed on the site. Go sign up there. That's it. I love y'all. I'm out.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.